Schlach, and it speaks about the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov was by Lavan in Padan Aram for many years, approximately 20 years, and he's now on the way back, and he sent messengers to Esav hoping to create some good connection between the two. Obviously, he left the land of Israel because Esav wanted to kill him because he took his blessings. But now, after so many years, when he's coming back, he hopes there is a way to reconcile. And he sends him a gift with messengers, but they come back and they say, he's not interested in peace. He's going towards you with 400 people forever. So Yaakov does different things in order to prepare himself. And then the Torah tells us, and I want you to open, please, in page 175. 175. Okay, and we will start with 22. Or 23. 23. Okay? But he got up that night and took his two wives, his two handmaids, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Yabok, and when he took them and had them cross over the stream, he sent over all his possessions. Okay, so Yaakov sent all his family and the possessions to the other side of the stream, and Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. Okay, so he's alone on one side of the brick. His family and his possessions are on the other, and he is by himself. And then he is attacked, and there is a fight. And we all know famously that it was the angel of Esav that came to fight him. So let's see what happened there. Okay, let's go further. 26. When he perceived, meaning that the angel perceived, that he could not overcome him, even though it was a fight between an angel and a human being, the human being is successful. Yaakov can overcome an angel, right? And it comes to a point that the angel sees that he cannot overcome him. So he struck the socket of his hip. So Jacob's hip socket was dislocated as he wrestled with him, right? So he damaged him slightly, right, in his hip, but Yaakov won. So then he said, the angel said, let me go, for dawn has broken. The angel was supposed to say a song to Hashem, sing a song to Hashem, say Shira to Hashem at that point. And that's why he asks Yaakov, let me go. So, and he said, Yaakov said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Okay? Yaakov is not ready to let him go. Why does he want to hold him? Let's see, right? So he said to him, what is your name? Yaakov asks the angel, and he the angel asks Yaakov. So Yaakov said to Jacob, he said, no longer will it be said that your name is Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with the divine and with men and have overcome. Okay? And then Yaakov inquires and he said, divulge, if you please, your name. And he said, I cannot tell you the name, right? But this is the story. Okay? Meaning he blessed him, right? Now, what was going on here? Why did Yaakov want him to bless him, right? So let's see what commentaries say. We have to understand what took place here. Later on, we have again a reference to the fact that the name of Yaakov was changed. Here, it was changed by the angel. The angel told him, your name will not be Yaakov anymore, it will be Israel. Later on, Hashem says it to Yaakov. I want you to go to page 189. Later on, after you already met with the son and separated from him, Hashem reveals himself to Yaakov. And at the top of the page, 189, verse number 9, and God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram, meaning Yaakov is still on the way, right, after the war with the angel and after reconciling with the son. And he, Hashem, this time blessed him. Then God said to him, your name is Jacob. Your name shall not always be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. Meaning you have the name Yaakov too, but it will not always be the name that you will be called by. You'll have an additional name, and this is Israel. Thus, he called his name Israel. It says again, right? He called his name Israel. Okay? Then Yaakov heard it. Okay? No, I'm sorry. And then Hashem continued and said to him, I am Kel Shakai, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a congregation of nations shall descend from you, and kings shall issue from you, loins. The land that I gave to Abraham and to Yitzhak, I will give to you, and to your offspring after you, I will give the land. Then God ascended from upon him in the place where he had spoken with him. So Hashem changes his name, and then he tells him something about the future. What does he tell him? He tells him that a nation, if you go back to verse number 10, okay, your name will be Israel. And then in 11, God said to him additional things. I am Kel Shakai, be fruitful and multiply, meaning he tells him more people should come out of you, you should multiply. And then he says, a nation and a congregation of nations shall descend from you. To whom does this refer? We don't know. Okay. Rashi says, if you look at Rashi here, so Rashi says, Goyim, that the people that from him will come, Goyim, I'm sorry, and a pre-Urveh, that's Binyamin, because at that time, Yaakov has 11 children, but he doesn't have Binyamin yet. And then he says, nations will come for you. It refers to Ephraim and Menashe, meaning more tribes will be considered yours. Yosef will be divided into two, Menashe and Ephraim. So this is the multiple of nations, right? So according to the Pshat, Hashem tells Yaakov he will have more children. He'll have Binyamin, who was not born yet, and Yosef will be divided into two tribes. Okay, fine. But there was something very, very interesting taking place that I want to show you in Rashi on the place. Okay? Just a second. Yeah, here it is. Okay. So there is another explanation in Rashi to the fact that more children will come out of him. And Rashi says as follows. That 70 people will come out of him, 70 souls, corresponding to the 70 nations. Okay? Fine. We are told more information about what took place here. Yaakov did not want the angel to go unless he blesses him. And later on, Rashi explains something very, very interesting. And this is that the angel wanted very, very much to go, to the extent that he cried and said, please, please let me go. And Yaakov said, no, you have first to bless me, and only then we'll go. And our sages tell us that the angel told him, Hashem is going to bless you. It will be in Beit Kel. Now he's on the way, right? He's not yet in Beit Kel. But when you will reach Beit Kel, then Hashem will bless you. Hashem will bless you, and I'll be there too. So please let me go now, and I'll be there when God will bless you. Now, it's very difficult to understand, right? Yaakov wants the angel to bless him. Rashi tells us that what he really wanted was that being that Yaakov took the blessings against the will of Esav, Esav did not agree to this reality that the blessings go to Esav. So he wanted the angel of Esav to admit that he deserves the blessings, that the blessings belong to him and not to Esav. So the angel didn't say no. Being that Yaakov overcame, fought the war and won, he didn't say no. He said, fine, but let me go now. And wait, when you will come to Beit Kel, and he says it in prophecy, Hashem will bless you. And he will say that the blessings belong to you. And I'll be there too, and I'll admit. Yaakov did not agree, even though the angel cried. It looks very cool. He wants to go up to Shemaim. It's time to say Shira. It's time to sing to Hashem, to praise Hashem came. What does it matter to Yaakov if he admits now that the blessings belong to him? Or a little bit later, it didn't take long. When Hashem spoke to him, it was a short while after, right? And the angel promised, I'll be there. And I'll admit then to the blessings. And it was so important to the angel that he cried. So why was Yaakov seemingly so cruel and said no? The whole story needs an explanation. More than this, what value does it have if the angel admits that the blessings belong to Yaakov because he was forced to? He can't live otherwise. Yaakov doesn't let him live. He holds on to him and doesn't let him live. So is it really blessing somebody when he's forced? You put a gun to the head of a person and you tell him, bless me, and he gives a blessing. It's meaningless. So what took place here? The whole story is very, very not understood. Very difficult. To understand this story, we have to go backwards. We have to go to the beginning of Parashat Vayetze, last week's portion, and over there we'll find something written that some connection to this story, and it will clarify to us and answer the questions that we asked. So let's go to page 311, just to see where we are, and then we'll move quickly further. So it tells us that the top, right? I'm sorry, I'm not in the right. Oop, just a man in the right place, just a moment. Go to 188. To 188. No, sorry. I marked it, just give me a moment. Okay, it's the beginning of Parashat Vayetze. Okay, it's page 145. Jacob departed from Beersheba and went towards Haran. Right, that's how the parsha starts. He's going to Haran. When he goes to Haran, he has the famous dream of the ladder, right? And Hashem reveals himself to him. And after Hashem reveals himself to him, Yaakov is making a neder, promising something to Hashem. He says as follows, go please to the next page, 147. Verse number 20. Yaakov says the following. Then Jacob took a vow, saying, after this amazing revelation of the ladder of Yaakov, right? He says the following. If God will be with me, will guard me on this way that I am going, will give me bread to eat and clothes to wear, and I return in peace to my father's house, and Hashem will be a God to me. Then I'll give one-tenth of everything that I have to Hashem. Obviously, if Hashem gives him food to eat and clothes to wear, so he's with him. What's the addition? Hashem will be with me. So there are commentaries who say that this is the promise of Yaakov, not and Hashem will be a God to me, but then Hashem will be a God to me. Very interesting, right? And then I'll build the altar and I'll bring offerings and whatever I'll have, I'll give one-tenth to Hashem, to Maaser. Okay? So, what does it mean if Hashem will be a God to me? If he gives him to eat, if he gives him to drink, of course he's a God to him. What does it mean if God will be with me? It's an additional thing. So Rashi says the following. If Hashem will keep, I'm sorry. He says, Sheyachol Shmo Alai, that the name of Hashem will rest upon me from the beginning till the end, that there will be no defect among my offspring. Very interesting. So what does this say? What does he ask for? He asks for the fact that the name of Hashem, V'haya Hashem li le'elokim, that the name of Hashem will be to me a God, right? That Hashem will be a God to me, says Rashi. I want to read it to you in the perfect way, okay? And Hashem will be a God to me, that his name will rest upon me from beginning to end, that no defect should be found in my offspring. Okay, this is what he's asking. So Yaakov makes a promise. If Hashem will give me food, clothes, and if my children will be without defect, right, then I will build an altar and bring offerings. What does it mean that the name of Hashem will rest upon me from the beginning till the end? Who is the beginning? Who is the end? Where is the end? And how is it connected to the fact that there will be no defect among my children? We don't understand the whole story. So we saw till now three places. One place, Yaakov wrestles with the angel. He wants to leave. Yaakov doesn't let him. He says, you have to bless me. The angel says, yes, I will bless you. I will admit that the blessings belong to you. But let's wait, not now. Then Hashem will reveal himself to you a little later, right? Then I'll come and admit. And Yaakov doesn't want to agree in no way, okay? Even though the angel cries. Later on, Yaakov fulfills the promise that we just read. What did he say? If Hashem will bring me back to the land of Israel, I'll have what to eat, I'll have what to drink, and there will be no defect among my children. The name of Hashem will be upon me from beginning till end. Then I'll build an altar. So let's go back to the place where it happened. Okay, so we are back at page 1. Okay. 188. In this place, Yaakov is building the altar that he promised. What means that Vehaya Hashem li le'elokim, that the condition that the name of Hashem will rest upon me from the beginning till the end was fulfilled here. Right? And that's why he's doing his share. He's building the altar and puts oil on it, right? After Hashem speaks to him and tells him what that his name will be changed and that Kehal goyim yomimcha melachim echalatzecha yetzeu, that more children will come out of him, right? As he said, right? What's going on here? Okay. So Rashi says something else here that we need to add in order to understand what's going on here. When Hashem says, your name will not anymore be Yaakov, it will be Israel. So Rashi says, here Hashem tells him the blessings really belong to you, not to Esav, right? But then he says something else very interesting on the fact that nations will come out of him. He says the following. We said before there will be 70 people from Yaakov that will go down to Mitzrayim and they'll correspond to the 70 nations. But then Rashi adds another explanation. He says, a time will come, Hashem tells Yaakov, where your children will bring offerings at the time that it is prohibited. They'll bring it outside of the Beit HaMikdash in what's called Bamot. Bamot is an altar that is outside of the Beit HaMikdash. A person who wants to bring an offering and builds an altar for himself, it's called a Bama, Bamot in plural. So Hashem tells Yaakov, a time will come where your children, at the time that it's prohibited, will soon explain, to bring offerings on a Bama, will bring offerings outside of the Beit HaMikdash, and it will be at the time of Eliyahu Hanavi. Very interesting. So let's first explain. As long as the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim that was built by Shlomo was not built yet, every Jew who wanted to bring an offer to Hashem could build an altar in his backyard and bring an offering. And it was okay. As Beit HaMikdash was built, this became prohibited. And the only place for any Jew who wants to bring offerings was in Yerushalayim in the Beit HaMikdash. So people who wanted to bring offerings had to come to Yerushalayim. But here, when Hashem tells Yaakov that his name will be Israel and that nations will come out of him, Rashi says something that seems to us totally not related. And this is that a time will come that the Jewish people will bring offerings on Bamot, even though the Beit HaMikdash stands. And when will it be? By the time of Eliyahu Navi. What does it have to do here with what's going on? Right? We don't understand it at all. So to understand it, we have to go to the story in Prophets where Eliyahu brings offerings outside of the Beit HaMikdash. The famous story. I want to read some of the psukim. Okay, and see what's going on here. So just a little bit background. At the time of Eliyahu Navi, the king and the queen were two very wicked people. Ahav was the king and Izebel was the queen. The two of them killed all true prophets and encouraged the false prophets to be the leaders, the spiritual leaders of the Jewish nation. Okay? So it's a very difficult time in the Jewish people, at the Jewish people. As a result of it, Eliyahu asked that a famine will come upon the nation, and for 3 years there was a famine. We won't go into what happened in those 3 years, but after those 3 years, Eliyahu and Ahav meet. The king that wanted to kill Eliyahu and doesn't even know that he's alive, right? Or doesn't know where he is to kill him. So Eliyahu and Ahav meet, and Ahav accuses Eliyahu for bringing a famine towards the Jewish nation and tells him, you are the one who caused problems to the Jewish nation. And Eliyahu says, no, it's not me, it's you. And he tells him, let's do a test and prove whose fault it is. So that's where we are in terms of the background. And now I'm starting in the Psukim. Okay? He tells him, you, Achav, is the one who causes trouble because you encourage the false prophets to cause the Jewish people to worship idols. And that's the cause for the famine. So he tells him the following. Okay, it's if you want to look it up, it's Kings chapter 18. So he said, now, I'm sorry, and now, send and gather all of Israel to me at Mount Carmel. So Eliyahu tells Ahav, gather all the people to Mount Carmel, and also the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of the Asherah tree who eat at Isabel's table. Isabel supported 850 false prophets. So Eliyahu say, gather all of Israel and gather all those prophets too. Those who forced the Jewish people or convinced the Jewish people to worship idols. Okay? Ahav sent among all the children of Israel and he gathered the prophets to Mount Carmel. Eliyahu approached all the people and said, how long will you dance between two opinions? If Hashem is the God, go after him. And if the Baal, which is a name for an idol, go after it. Meaning, in other words, the Jewish people at that time believed in Hashem. It was a previous generation and an ancient generation, a high generation. But it wasn't so simple to overcome the tests of the false prophets. They were people who fooled themselves to think that they are real prophets, and they're not simple people, right? But wicked. So the Jewish people believed in Hashem, but also worshiped idols. And that's why he tells them it cannot be the two together. It's either or. You have to decide. If God is God, you go after him. If it's the idols, go after them. And then he suggests to them the following. He says, but the people did not answer him at all. The people did not say, yes, we want to go after God, or yes, we want to go after the Baal. No answer. So Eliyahu said, I alone have remained as a prophet of Hashem, and the prophets of the Baal are 450 men, meaning I am one against 450. But let us be given two bulls. Let them choose the one bull for themselves, cut it, and put it on the wood, but not apply fire. And I too will prepare the other bull and place it on the wood, and I will not apply fire. So what it says is, you'll buy an altar, you'll put an animal on it, I'll build an altar, I'll slaughter it, cut it, put it on the altar. But we don't put fire. There is wood, but no fire. You shall call out in the name of your gods, and I shall call out in the name of Hashem. And whichever God responds with fire, he is the God. So that's the test, right? We don't put fire on the altar. You will pray to your gods, I'll pray to Hashem. And wherever fire will descend from above and consume the animal, we know that's the real God. Okay. All the people responded, the proposal is good. The Jewish people were ready for the proposal because they wanted to know the truth. They were false by the false prophets, but they wanted to know the truth. So what happened? Eliyahu said to the prophets of the Baal, choose for yourself the one bull and prepare it first, for you are the many. and call out in the name of your God, but do not apply fire. They took the bull that he gave them and prepared it and called out in the name of the Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was neither sound nor response, and they danced by the altar that he had made. So they tried everything, even dancing. But obviously, a fire did not come from above. Then Eliyahu said, okay, it was at noontime. Eliyahu ridiculed them and said, cry out in a loud voice, for he is a god. Perhaps he is conversing or pursuing enemies or relieving himself. Perhaps he is asleep and he will awake. So obviously he shows them the nothingness of a god, right, that needs to relieve himself or is busy and cannot respond, and so on. They called out with a loud voice and cut themselves with swords and spread according to their custom until blood spurted on them. When the noon hour passed, they prophesied until the time of the afternoon offering, but there was neither sound, nor response, nor listener. Okay, then came the turn of Eliyahu. Eliyahu then said to all people, draw near to me. And all the people drew near to him. He repaired and ruined all the ruined altar of Hashem. Eliyahu took 12 stones, corresponding to the number of the tribes of the children of Yaakov. Okay, we start to see that there is some connection, right, to our story. He calls them the tribes of Yaakov, right? He built the stone into an altar for the name of Hashem, and he made the trench large enough to plant 2 shares of seed around the altar. And he arranged the wood, he cut up the bull and put it on the wood. Then he said, fill your jugs with water and pour them over the elevation offering and over the wood. He wanted to make the miracle even greater, obviously. Wood that is wet doesn't catch fire, right? And he told them also in the tunnels, so to speak, right, that he dug around, pour water as well. And he said, do it 3 times, right? And they did it a 3rd time. Then the water went all around the altar, and the water even filled up the trench. And it was at that time of the afternoon offering, Eliyahu the prophet approached and said, Hashem, God of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Israel, today it will become known that you are God in Israel, and I am your servant, and that it is by your word that I have done all these things. Answer me, Hashem, answer me. And let these people know that you, Hashem, are the God. You will turn their hearts, the hearts break. A fire of Hashem descended and consumed the elevation offering and the wood and the stones and the earth, and it licked up the water in the trench. The entire people saw and fell on their faces and exclaimed, Hashem, he is God. Hashem, he is God. Hashem, he is God, is Hashem who Elohim. It's the same word that Yaakov said, I wish that Hashem will be my God, and if this will happen, then I'll give 1/10 of all that I have as a thief. So this is the story that Rashi refers to in our portion, right? When we see, right, that the promise of Hashem was fulfilled. Now, what's the meaning of it? Why is this connected? Here Hashem Elohim, here Hashem Elohim, but still we don't know what it is all about. So let's understand, what does it mean, first on the pshat level, Hashem hu Elohim, right? What we said, that it's connected to Eliyahu, that's not a simple understanding, right? The simple understanding is, if Hashem will be my God, meaning, if his name will rest upon me from the beginning till the end, that's what Rashi says, and my offsprings will all be wholesome, will be righteous. There will be no defects among them, right? So let's understand what is the Hashem or Elohim. It's two names of Hashem, Hashem and Elohim. The name Hashem, which is written with a Yud and a Hey and a Vav and a Hey, is the name that comes from Lehavot. Lehavot means to give existence. This is the name that gives existence, that indicates the fact that Hashem gives existence to everything that is here. There is nothing that exists that is not dependent fully and completely on Hashem. Hashem is the one who gives existence. Nothing else exists without him and besides him. This is what we say, Ein od milvado. Ein od milvado means there is nobody besides him. But here we are here. But we are also him, an expression of his, enabling us to exist. You take away from Hashem from the picture, there is nothing. No existence of inanimate vegetation, animals, human beings, energy, whatever it will be. There is no existence whatsoever unless Hashem grants this existence. Hashem, the name Elohim means something different. When we see that Hashem really gives existence to everything, we have no doubts. Everything is clear, and no belief in any other idea besides what Hashem tells us is possible. This is what happened, for example, when Hashem gave us the Torah. It's written that when we received the Torah, Hashem showed us that how everything depends on him. Meaning, in other words, he showed us the universe, but not just the physical universe, but the godliness that gives it existence. So it was so clear to us that everything is here because of Hashem. They saw it. They had total clarity about it, including they themselves. They understood and saw, not only in the mind, but it became a reality for them. That was clear beyond any doubt that there is no existence besides Hashem. When this is the case, there is no room for a mistake. And this is what was at the time of the giving of the Torah. We saw it. The name Elohim is the name with which Hashem created the world. Creation, in the story of creation, if you look in the chapter, the first chapter in Bereshit, the only name of Hashem that appears is Elohim. So, via the name Elohim, the world was created. That's the name of creation. Why? What is this name all about? When we look at creation, we can see Hashem, even though we don't see it in the way that it was seen at Mount Sinai. But when we see the sophistication, the complexity, the beauty of this reality, we can come to see Hashem. And that's what really the Pasuk tells us. We are told, lift your eyes up to Shamayim and see who created it. It's so clear. You look at nature and you must come to the conclusion. It's so sophisticated, it's so planned that you cannot say that it happened on its own. You see Hashem. But there are people who look at Shamayim and deny Hashem. Because Hashem created the world in order for us to have free choice. And he created the world in a way that we can be mistaken and believe in other gods. And it's our job to overcome this possibility, this not to fall into this mistake. This is what is described by the word Elohim. It's very interesting. If you look at the word Elohim, the word Elohim is in plural. Eloka is the singular, and Elohim is the plural. What means, in other words, it's a name of God, but in the plural. But there is only one God. But the word Elohim is used also in other words. While the name Hashem, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is only a name of God and used only as a name of God, and we can't even pronounce it. We don't know how to pronounce it. We just, when we see the name of Hashem, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, we don't say it the way it's written, right? We say Aleph, Daled, Nun, Yud, right? We don't pronounce it, right? Because we don't even know how. Because it's the name that comes before creation, what is above us, right? But then Word Elohim comes in plural and is used also for other things. Judges are called Elohim in the Torah. And even idols are called Elohim Acherim, foreign gods, right? But we use the name Elohim for them too. Because creation can bring a person to see God, but creation also can bring a person to deny God. Why? Because there are many, many powers in creation. There is heat and cold. There is humidity and dryness. A human being is the opposite character traits. There are human beings, there are animals, there are luminaries. There are so many things in this world. And being that there are so many, and many of them are very, very powerful, it's possible to attribute to them godliness. And that's idol worship. When we take somebody that is a creation, and we worship him as if he is a god, right? And that's a possibility. Ben Yaakov says, V'haya Hashem li le'elokim. I am asking that Yud-Kei Vav-Kei will be for me Elohim. Meaning, he asks that there will be no difference for him and his children between Hashem and Elohim. In other words, if Hashem is revealed and if Hashem is hidden, they should have the same clarity and will remain wholesome. That even in a hidden reality, where things are difficult, when the hand of Hashem is not so obvious, even when we look into nature and we see cause and effect seemingly, that it will be clear to them that Hashem is God. That with the same clarity, as if they stand at Sinai, right? And Hashem reveals it to them. They see really the godliness that holds everything and gives existence to everything. This is what Yaakov asks. When was it fulfilled? After Yaakov battled with the angel of Esav, who stands for the opposite, right? Esav is the symbol for the bad inclination, is the one to cause the mistakes. He overcame Esav, right? What is really achieving the highest level that a human being can achieve, fighting with an angel and overcoming him, right? Then basically, Hashem was his God. To him, the hidden, the revealed, were the same. He's in the most difficult battle with evil, and he overcomes, what means he has total clarity. Esav, that stands for evil, cannot affect him. That's an unbelievable time for Yaakov. And that's the meaning that Yaakov won the battle with the angel. It's not a physical battle, it was a spiritual battle. Who will prevail? Yaakov, the will of Hashem, or Esav, who is against it? And Yaakov won. Great. So the angel says, let me go. Yaakov says no. Why? Before it comes to the battle itself, the Torah tells us something. And this is that Yaakov moved everything, the family, his possessions, to the other side of the river. But then he came back. Why? He forgot a few little dishes of clay. Insignificant. Yaakov was Very, very rich at the time. Very, very rich at the time. And it was a time of danger also, right? Esav is heading towards him for a war. Still, he crossed the brook, the stream, in order to collect these small little things. So all his family and possessions were on one side. He was alone. Meaning, in other words, he was vulnerable. It shows a point of vulnerability. He's alone, right? And it's night also, right? So that's the time for Esav to attack him. But it's a spiritual war. So it stands for the fact that Yaakov himself cannot be influenced by Esav. Yaakov achieved perfection. The Torah says when he came back to Israel, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, he was wholesome. And we are told wholesome in his body, wholesome in his money, he had a lot of money, and wholesome spiritually. He achieved the maximum that a human being can achieve. He did exactly what Hashem intended for him to accomplish. Esav cannot overcome him. But now there is a vulnerable place. Future generations. In future generations, not every Jew has the clarity that Yaakov had at this moment. Yaakov wants that the angel will bless him here. At the point of weakness, when it's dark, the angel says no. Let's go to Beit Kel. Then Hashem will reveal himself to you. When the fulfillment of your vow will take place, meaning Hashem, it will be clear that Hashem is giving you everything and so on. And Hashem calls you Israel. Then I'll admit to the blessings. What's the difference between then and now? Now, the situation where Yaakov is stands for difficult times and weaker generations. The small little dishes that he's going for are symbolic for small generations, late generations, weak generations, times of darkness. Right? And the angel is not ready to say that generations like this will also get the blessings. No, not this. When you'll be in Beit Kel, in the right place for Yaakov, what symbolizes good times for Klal Israel, good times for the Jewish nation, where they follow Hashem, like the time of David, the time of Shlomo, the time of Yahushua, then I am ready to admit that the blessings belong to you. But the weak ones, those who behave like me, says the angel of Esav, they belong to me. They cannot be blessed. And he cries. He says, this belongs to me. And Yaakov says, oh no. I am not giving up on any Jew. You will do it now. In this weak place that stands for the Jewish people who will not be able to overcome tests. I want to be called Israel even then. Israel means the name of Hashem is in my name. Meaning, I want a guarantee that the godliness will be in every Jew to the extent that it will guarantee that eventually they'll come to wherever they are supposed to come. The angel didn't want to do it, but Yaakov didn't let him go. He said, wait, when you'll be in the ideal place, everything will be great. I'll be there, I'll bless you. Yaakov says, no, here. And he did. He had no choice. So at this moment, the request of Yaakov that from the beginning till the end, all his generations, there will be no defect there, is fulfilled. Right? Because the angel says, yes, there will be godliness inside of every Jew that eventually will bring him there, will bring him to wherever he's supposed to be. Now we understand the connection between this and the time of Eliyahu. The generation of Eliyahu symbolizes a time where Jewish people worship idols. It came to the point that the king and the queen killed all true prophets. Not only did they kill the good prophets, the true prophets, they took the false prophets and sustained them. They ate with the queen every day, on the queen's table every day. And the Jewish people was very emerged, very involved in idol worshiping. And it seems as if they belong to Esav. If not of Yaakov achieving now, at this moment, the admittance of the Malach, of the angel, that the Jewish people will be blessed even when they are in weak points, even when it's at night, some people would not reach the day. Some Jewish people would not get there when the day breaks out, when the redemption will come. So by what Eliyahu did, his generation came to the clarity that the Jewish people had when they were at Sinai. They said, Hashem hu Elokim, and repeated it twice because they were so certain. So when Eliyahu did this miracle, performed this miracle, it didn't mean just to show, you know, Hashem is with me, see, I perform a miracle. No, he wanted them to see that dark times, light times, doesn't matter. Hashem is with us and in us, and we can be on the level of Yaakov, each and every one of us. And that's why Rashi says when Yaakov was told or said, Hashem should be my God, right? And Hashem told him, right? Afterwards, your name will be Israel, and Hashem will be your God, says Rashi, he hinted him toward the time of Eliyahu, because that's an example to what he says. Now, the Talmud says something very fascinating, that once in 7 years, there is a festival to the Roman people. The Roman people are the children of Esav, right? One in 70 years, there is a festival that the Romans celebrate. And what do they do in this festival? They take a person who is wholesome, and they take a person that limps, one symbolizing Esav, and one symbolizing Yaakov, that after the war with the angel limped because he affected somewhat the future generations. That's the meaning of the injury of Yaakov. He himself is awesome, but the thigh, right, was affected, future generations. So they take a wholesome person, they put him on top of a limping one. They put on the wholesome person the clothing of first men. That's the clothing that Esav later on had, right? And Yaakov wore when he came to ask for the blessings, right? And they put on him the skin of Rabbi Ishmael Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Ishmael Kohen Gadol was one of the 10 people that the Roman killed. And when he was going to be killed on the way, the daughter of the king saw him and he was very, very beautiful. So she asked to remove the skin and give it to her. So this skin was put also in the wholesome person, right? And they are saying, when they do it, that the promise that Yaakov promised to his children, that the Mashiach will come, is false. He is a liar. He lied to Esav, and that's how he got the blessings. And he is a liar. His prophecies are a lie. And then they add, but vow to Esav at the end. What does this mean? If it took place practically or not, doesn't matter, right? It's an idea that the Talmud speaks about. And what is it? Once in 70 years, something happens. Meaning once in 70 years, every human being, that's the lifespan according to Torah, right? Of a human being. Yamei chayenu bahem 70 shana, says King David, right? So a person will experience the fact that Esav is ruling over us. He is riding over Yaakov. He is beautifying himself by a great, great sage that was killed by the Romans. Doesn't make sense. It seems that the Romans prevail. And that's why they say, see, we are in power, and whatever Yaakov is all about and what he says is false. But deep down, they know the truth. And they say, oi, 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 what will be at the end? Meaning, in other words, what the Talmud tells us is, all over the years, there will be time of darkness. There will be times that other nations will prevail over us, that will be subjugated to them, and their culture, their way of life, might affect us. There will be high generations and low generations. And there might be times where we'll think it's over. See, the righteous are killed. The skin of Rabbi Ishmael Kohen Gadol, right, was the righteous of the righteous, is beautifying the sun. What's going on here, right? But we have to know that even Esav knows deep down that we are to prevail at the end. And even though they say, Yaakov is gone, Hashem chose us now, as Christianity said, yeah, we were the chosen, but now it's the Christians, right? They see themselves as those who are above us. But deep down, they know that the world is ours, was created for us, and eventually will prevail. And that's why they hate us so much. But this is a very big comfort, because what it tells us, each and every one of us, that each and every one of us has the potential, even a time of darkness, to see Hashem with total clarity. If we just fight evil the same way that Yaakov fought Esav. Okay, we finish here and open for questions and discussion.
Before we open for questions, I just want to make an announcement. The class is Li'uli Nishmas, Mi'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha, Bas David Mordechai. If you give me 1 minute, a few seconds, I will allow you to unmute yourselves. You should be able to unmute. Can people unmute?
Yeah, I have a question. I know we didn't really touch this, but the fact that Rachel got her father's idol,
yeah.
Can you speak a little bit on that? Because I read a few different reasons as to why she took it. Like she wanted her father to stop, you know, to stop praying to those idols or believing in them. But she never threw it out. So is there anything that can
I
clarify?
Don't know to answer without preparing. So
okay.
I can try to do it for next time. But
okay,
I
thank you so much.
Explain more than this.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so have a good week and see you next week in Eretz Yisrael.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Pleasure.
I have a question. Is it too late?
Okay, no, not yet.
Okay, thank you. Just two clarifying questions. The Gemara that said over that once in every 70 years, the children of Esav get together and have a festival. So they put the Yaakov on top of Esav and they get dressed. What happens at the end? Even though they celebrate, then they say, oi?
Yeah.
And they have?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that was one question.
Then, they say Yaakov is false and, you know, we prevail and so on and so on.
Uh-huh.
But still they say, oi, what will be at the end?
Okay, and the other question is, I didn't understand the Pachim Ketanim, how do they symbolize the weaker and more vulnerable Tkufa and Klal Yisrael?
Because why would Yaakov go back for these small little things?
Mm-hmm,
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the meaning of the that exactly when he went to take these small little things. So commentary says that it's the whole thing is symbolic, right? Anyhow, we don't explain it as a physical battle, right, between Yaakov and the angel. It's all a battle between good and evil. So what's the significance of the small things? The small things are the smaller generations that maybe are not worthwhile, and Asaf feels that's mine.
Which is mamish what we're living through today.
What did you say again?
Which is mamish what we're living through today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you so much, Revitin.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay,
pleasure.
Also.
Have a good week.